Okay, Tib, here we come in the podcast, and we have to talk about David Ayers. Is that how you pronounce his name?
I believe it's Ayers.
Ayers, okay. I mean, here's a guy, 42 years old, drove the Zamboni, maintenance guy, and he comes in there. I mean, I watched that game. Well, we watched it. We'll talk about the fight after. But I watched that game, and they had five guys back. And if you look at the fifth and sixth goals, I watched them very closely. They tried to put the puck up the middle, and that's a killer. And
it was funny when you're watching the game, when Mrazek went down, it was kind of funny that the Carolina players were kind of laughing a little bit not when he was hurt, but when the goalie came in. But you could see Brind'Amour because that was a big game for them.
Oh, they had to, when you were saying that they dumped the puck in more than any other club.
Yep, they said that they dumped the puck in 53% of, like, I don't know how they get the stat, but they said 53% of the time they dump the puck in and they get the most goals on the forecheck.
Well, they're doing pretty good. I have to, and they're like jerks after, but they do pretty good when the game's on.
But it was like they won the Stanley Cup after that, eh? Jumping on the goalie and then in the dressing room.
Yeah, that was really, in the dressing room, usually those are fake, and, you know, I don't care what anybody says, those are fake. The guy is never the same, talks the same, you know, they have it in between. That was real emotion. And he walked in the room, good camera working everything in there, Hockey Night in Canada, and they just went nuts. You see the stuff flying?
Yeah, they got beer, and they were showering them with beer and stuff, yeah.
It was unbelievable. And, you know, what to talk about a once-in-a-lifetime experience, unbelievable. And they won, and they actually won that game. You know, everybody's on the Leafs. They played pretty good. It was tough playing a team that had five guys back all the time. And the fifth and sixth goal killed them. I think they would have won the game if they hadn't gone up the middle. And then after that, you know, I said, what are we doing? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I'm watching. And good for him. Good for David. And he'll never forget. And I'll tell you one thing: the Leafs will never forget a game like that.
No,
I can't believe it. I had that happen to me. We had it. All my experience, we had it happen once, and it was against Buffalo, and they had an assistant trainer, and his name was Porky. I know that sounds too good.
So you were playing in Rochester.
Playing in Rochester, and we had a powerful club. We won the championship that year. And but everybody was so anxious to get a shot at him, they were missing, going over the net, and they lost the game. Buffalo lost the game, but we should have scored a ton on him. But another time, when I was a rookie, I was in Hershey, and Scotty Alexander, the trainer, told me that the year before, we never had a backup back then. We never had a backup. I know that's hard to believe. We never had a backup.
How'd you practice?
I don't know. You know, when I think of it now, I don't know. We never had a backup. I can't think of how we practiced again. But I know we never had a backup. Oh, yeah, Scotty went in. Scotty went in.
So the trainer went in.
Yeah, trainer went in. He was like the trainer. And then he'd leave early right after. And it was really something. So anyhow, Scotty went in, and in Buffalo, he was telling me. And the knob of his stick, he put it in and went through the netting. And he's trying to get it out, and the fans are giving him a hard time. He looks up, and here's Sam Batille coming in, one of the greatest scorers in the American Hockey League. He's coming in on him. They lost the game. But, you know, that when I look back on that, I remember in Florida that LaLonga was hurt, and he was in the dressing room. And then the other guy got hurt too, and LaLonga come out and finished the game, even though he was hurt. I will make a prediction. The general managers this week are having a meeting. They will have a guy, a young guy, you know, 31, that can play. They'll have him in the dressing room ready to go. They will never, ever have a 42-year-old guy. David, I'm not knocking you or anything, but they'll never have a 42-year-old guy, a maintenance guy, a Zamboni driver that plays, you know, that pick up hockey. They'll have a guy that can play, and he'll play for either team. But he'll be ready to go, because that, you know, that is really rinky-dink. That's like if your both quarterbacks got hurt, you picked up a guy out of the crowd. I mean, this is Major League Hockey, and from now on, I predict they'll have come out of that meeting. You'll have to have a guy ready to go if a guy gets hurt, and he can play for either side.
So you want like somebody who's played, you know, junior A or...
Or yeah, junior A and...
Or whatever, yeah.
And but that's what'll come out of that. But I tell you one thing, that was a great thing. Now, Tim, let's talk about the fight.
Before we go with that, Cindy, you know, I just want to say, Cindy, David Ayers and I have something in common, that we both had kidney transplants.
Of course, we have Cindy with us here. And Cindy... she's going to tell about they're having a great thing with the Western Hockey League. Boy, they've really got behind it and really done a great job. Cindy's done it with the Kidney Foundation, done a great job. And tell us about Western Hockey League, how great they are, and I love those guys in the Western Hockey League.
Well, they have a campaign going on right now. As you know, this is their third year in a row for promoting kidney transplants and raising funds for the Kidney Foundation of Canada. And what they do is all the teams in the WHL, they have your suit-inspired hockey sweaters on. And the players wear them during the game, and then they all sign them, and then they're up for auction. And you can't believe some of the money they get for these one-of-a-kind hockey sweaters.
Well, if they get that pipeline in, they'll get a lot more money.
Well, you know, there was one time last year that in one game, I think it was Medicine Hat or Regina, they raised $50,000on the auction for those hockey sweaters. And I hear now they have a special hockey sweater that has your name on the back.
And I don't know whether that's good or not.
Well, I'll tell you, there was two of them at the game, and each one of them got $2,000 for the winning
Holy
big.
Smokes.
And so they raise, and the awareness is just as important as raising money for the Kidney Foundation. But, you know, Remax, they come back every year as a sponsor, and each game they give away 1,000 free bobbleheads. So it's really a great campaign. The WHL has really stepped up.
Well, I have to speak of Logan Brulé. What a kid he has. He's an inspiration. He was in that car accident. And I think six people, I think you were telling me, six people are alive today because of Logan Brulé. And they have, what was it, a bracelet you can tell about?
Well, they have a thing now. His parents have really got involved in transplants and see the value of it. And they have a campaign called the Brulé Effect. And they're selling wristbands that you can purchase to make people aware of what he sacrificed and how many people are living because of him. And if people want to read more, they can go to canadadonates.ca. And it tells all about where the games are and about the Brulé effect and the whole deal.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. You know, your people that are listening out there, they're thinking, you know, kidney transplant. I don't know anything about that. And I remember Tim. How old were you when about 15 and about
when I had the transplant?
Yeah.
No, I was 13.
How old? 13.
13. Yeah.
I remember you and your leg. Your foot was swollen a little, and I. You know, I knew nothing about it. I'm like 99% of the people out there. I knew nothing about kidney transplants or plantsmats or anything. In fact, during that, this guy come up to me and says, I've been dialysis for 2 years. Oh, that's good. I had no idea. So we took you in. I remember taking you into the hospital, and he said, and the doctor said, you're getting in the hospital. And I said, his foot's only swollen. He says, in the hospital right now. And remember, Dr.
Heron.
Dr. Heron. Well, you won't forget. Yeah. And he was tough to understand. He had an Australian accent, and he spoke low, and I'm pardon. But I remember we had the meeting, and I'm getting carried away here, but we had the meeting, and Rose was good, and I was okay, but you were a perfect match.
I was a perfect match, and it really went well. We were in the I got out of the hot. We had the kidney transplant.
But anyhow, let me just jump back to the meeting with Dr. Heron, and so we was silence there, and we said, well, what's going on? He says, Cindy, are you going? Well, of course. You said, well, of course. There's no question. And you know, we looked at him kind of funny. He says, wait a minute. He says, there's families right now that I could tell you that do not want that will not give the kidney because they just won't, and they're the brothers. And I said, well, I didn't know what to say then. And you know, I didn't realize, I went through the whole thing and the whole deal and everything, and I didn't realize how important or whatever it was till I saw the two of you being wheeled up the corridor. What in the world, you know? And I Boy, you were sure brave. I remember, and then after it was over, it was the truth. And Rose sat with you, and I went and sat with Timothy. And as God is my judge, and they had a drip, there was stuff dripping in, you know, water, I guess, dripping in. And I could see, and Tim was as white as a ghost before, and I could see the color by the minute come back from, and it was unbelievable. And boy, that was really something. And you went, and your mother kept asking you all the time to go for a walk. Now, tell a story about that.
So I was in this. This was like we had to go in before. I had to go in before to do some tests and everything like that. So I was in for a while, and Mom would say, "Go for a walk. Go for a walk. Get out of the room and go for a walk in the hospital room at the Massachusetts General." And I was like,
"That was a great hospital.
Great hospital. Great people there.
Great cafeteria."
John,
To get off on a tangent, we went into the room where John Wayne, he had a valve in his heart.
Pig valve.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And you should see his room, the room he had. It was it was as big as a suite in a hotel, and it had a fireplace, and it was all kind of like oak, and looked over the Charles River. It was just like a...
And we only missed him by a week.
Missed him by, yeah.
Yeah, we could have met him.
And everybody loved him. And when he left, did y'all give watches or something?
Yeah, something like that. They said he was just great. So I'm 15 or 13, and you know, you're a little depressed.
Red Sox were big.
And the Red Sox were there, this was, you know, the Red Sox were always battling the Yankees, and Mom's going, you know, go for a walk. I said, I don't want to go for a walk, Mom. So one day, I said, okay, fine. I've been in the hospital for 2 weeks. I'm going to go for a walk. So I went downstairs, I went for a walk, and I came back, and a bunch of the Boston Red Sox came in.
Johnny Pesky,
Dwight Evans, and I forget who. I think it was Don Zimmer. Was there
third
base coach?
And you had a bat there, Carl Yastrzemski.
Gave me a bat and all that, and I left my room once, and that was when the Red Sox came.
And you know, they were probably just as happy, hey?
Yeah. Well, I think Dwight Evans. Son,
yeah, he came back.
Yeah, his
Dewey, son, I think they call him
Dewey. Yeah, his right son was here in the hospital too at the time, but you know, it goes to show you people that if you're needing a transplant, you think it's the end of the world. You know, you look at him. He went and won a.
And all the players, all the Boston Bruin players, unbeknownst to me, till a couple of years later, they all showed up. And down there, you have to give blood. You're not like here. I don't know.
Well, what happened was in the States at that time, you were charged for the amount of blood that you used during the operation, unless people donate blood in your name. And all the Bruins, and more importantly, their wives went down.
Their wives?
The wives went down and all gave blood in our name. And they, of course, would never have told us. And the only reason I knew and I found out was because when we were in the wives' room, Paula Schmatz was upset that she couldn't donate blood. This was afterwards. And because she was under 100 pounds, she weighed under 100 pounds and they wouldn't take her blood. So that's how we found out. And it's a lot different, you know, Canadians in their socialized medicine.
You know, I never understand people that don't give blood. I used to give blood all the time up until he told me I couldn't give it anymore. But I used to give blood all the time. And I used to think the people, where do you think the blood's coming from?
What do you think? Where do you think all these organs come from in the kidneys that people don't sign their donor card and you get a kidney transplant? There's a list. You're on the list.
Can happen to you, boy, because like I was the Boston Bruins coach. I was, flying along. I didn't know anything about it, but I found out pretty, and it can happen to anybody. And I remember we went on, and I was a coward. I was an absolute coward. I really was. I remember your mother. I remember this. We were taking Tim to the dialysis. What was it? Once a week?
No, every other day. And so we went.
We'd drive in from North Andover, and one day we're driving back, and Rose said, "That's it. One of us are given a kidney." And I didn't understand anything about it. She says, "We're having a meeting with Dr. Heron tomorrow," and. I'm like everybody else that's listening, you know, most of the people listening. And we had a meeting, that's a meeting. And she says a 13-year-old boy shouldn't have to go in and do this twice a day. And I never forgot that. And you were a match, and God was great.
Yeah, that's for sure. I owe a lot to Cindy.
Yeah, it would sure do. Okay, that's enough of that. Let's talk about, while we were watching the prelims last night, they were brutal last night in the fight last night.
Yes, we saw the Tyson Fury-Wilder rematch was on, and that was good. It was a good fight. And I the thing that you couldn't get over it was if you don't watch the boxing, how big those guys were.
6'9". How much?
273 pounds.
And you know, he was in good shape. He was in better shape than he was the first fight.
Yeah.
And the other guy, what was the other guy's name? Wilder.
Yeah.
And you said, you know, he looks worn out in the third round. But what happened was this big guy would grab him and wrestle with him. But it was a good fight, though.
Yeah, so Wilder won. The corner stopped it, which you don't see too often now in boxing.
Well, let me tell you what happened there. I noticed that this older guy was there with a beard. It was the second. He was very calm and everything like that.
He was in Wilder's corner.
Wilder's corner. And what happened was the sixth, what did he stop him in?
I think the seventh.
Seventh. In the sixth round, a new guy had come in, or the seventh round started, a new young guy had come in. I think that the older guy, because it was blood coming out of his ear, you couldn't see the blood. I've never seen that before.
In boxing before.
That sounds painful.
Well, it wasn't a cut. It was from inside.
His ear. They think he popped an eardrum.
It was like, the older guy wanted to stop the fight then. There's no doubt in my mind. And the young guy get in there and, come on, we got to keep going. And during the seventh round, I said, Tim, he's stopping it. The ref, you know, and the guy was pretty...
He was in the corner. He wasn't getting beat up too bad.
But like he was getting whacked. He wasn't getting whacked. And all of a sudden, the referee stepped in and stopped it, and he pointed. And I, what the heck's he pointing at? He's pointing at the second. The older guy that they didn't listen to threw in the towel. I hadn't seen that in a long time.
So they really do throw in the towel. That's not a metaphor. That's a real deal.
He threw in the towel, and Wilder was really upset. He says, you know, why did my corner throw in the towel? He says, I'm a champion. I want to go out on my shield. He says, I want to be not. He said, if I'm going to go out, I want to go out my shield. Remember he said that?
Yeah, he said that a couple of times.
Yeah, he was really, really upset with his corner, but the guy loved the guy so much, he threw it in. But it was fantastic. First of all, what's the big guy's name again?
He's Tyson Fury. He's from
Tyson Fury.
He calls himself the Gypsy King. So I guess he has lineage that he's like an Irish gypsy or something like that.
It was really funny. He came in like an Egyptian king. He had a big thing on, a big robe on, and he had four guys carrying him like that. And he came in to Patsy Cline crazy. I mean, you think it'd be a...
Yeah, they always have like rap or some heavy metal.
Yeah.
I'm going to kill you. Crazy by Patsy Cline.
Guy,
you're thinking, the whole audience was silent, thinking
maybe that's what he wanted, silence.
Well, he got it. And he came into the ring, and he had the ring, had the crown on, and the wrestling's got nothing on these guys.
No, then Wilder came in. He had a full mask on with a crown.
He looked tough.
Oh, and he's big.
Scary.
He's like 6'7" or something like that. Yeah. And he had a full mask, and the eyes lit up red as he walked in. And
wrestling has nothing
he
on
these. He had skulls on his shoulder, like shoulder pads with skulls on
them. Wait, we were all excited before the fight even started.
So this sounds more like the WWE. WWE, they call it.
Yeah. And then they introduced a guy, and he's an English guy, and they were going to sing God Save the Queen. He says, and he was really cocky guy. He said, hey, there's a lot of Brits out here, eh? And half the crowd cheered.
Yeah.
They were all Brits. They come over from it. And then the other guy came in. Boy, they really did it. They did it upright.
And then he won. Tyson Fury won. And he grabbed the mic from the guy that's interviewing him, and he started singing American Pie, like three choruses of it. I'm thinking, that's about an 8-minute song.
He sang an Irish song before.
That's a long song.
Yeah, but he sang an Irish song before. I don't know what he was singing before, and the Brits all, and the Irish guys all joined in. And then he sang American Pie.
He knows where his bread is buttered.
Well, I don't know. And no, he
Well, you know, they were, you know, the Fury. I mean, he was gracious in victory, and the other guy was humble in defeat. He says, you know, the better man won. You know, it was nice to see.
Yeah,
that.
it was good, but it was a brutal fight, though. Just brutal. I mean, it was brutal.
We should tell some Boston.
Later I'll tell some story. Well, yeah, Marvin Hagler was always my favorite. I just loved Marvin Hagler. You had to call him Marvelous. And he used to be with the Bruins all the time. He used to come in, but he came in my dressing room. And when they shake hands, they only touch the front. They don't want you some jerk off grabbing your hand and crushing it. He just touches it like that. And so, first of all, we should tell the first fight I took you to. Tell that one. This is funny.
So we went.
Or I think it's funny.
So I was probably about 10 or 11. So Dad says, you want to go down and see some fights at the Boston? So we went to the Boston Gardens, the old Boston Gardens.
Yeah, and it was built for boxing.
Right. But that's what it was originally built for. And that's why when we sat up high, and you're almost right over the ring. And that's why it was great to watch hockey, because you're almost right over the ice.
At some back of someone's head nowadays.
Now what they do now is they build them for basketball and hockey, and the slope isn't the same, although a few of them are. Go ahead.
So we go, and so the prelim comes on, and there's two Irish guys get in the ring.
They were a little heavy.
They were a little heavy.
And we'll say they're heavy.
Yeah.
And they just went toe-to-toe.
It was like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. They just stood in the middle of the ring.
And crowd was going nuts.
It was. They were just bloody pulp by the time they were done.
They loved it.
So then the main event came on.
Yeah.
And they're two...
They were good.
They're good guys.
Tin canners, but they were good.
And, they would like tap and get out. And they were kind of running and tap, get out. And they were really like after three rounds, it was a pretty boring fight.
It was the main, and they paid big dough. It went quiet. Amen.
Yeah, so it was all quiet. And what did the guys.
The guy, this is the funniest thing. And everybody's thinking the same thing. Bring back the fat guys.
No.
I tell you, I never forgot that.
There's something
the
like
crowd
Boston
just
fans.
Roared.
Yeah.
And it was, and you know, because it was such a great fight. That's what the people come up to see. What was the guy said to you one time? The guys got knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, like I'm a big boxing fan. I've been to Las Vegas to see quite a few fights, and I went down to see a Evander Holyfield fight Buster Douglas. Buster Douglas just beat Mike Tyson, right?
Yeah.
So he went down, but he was not in shape. Buster Douglas, and he came in. So he said, and I think it lasted.
That's what Mike Tyson thought he would be like.
Right, and he came in. So I think it lasted 43 seconds or something like that. Oh. He knocked him out. So, you're kind of disappointed. And I go to all the prelims. And, you fly down to Vegas. So I sat there and I was playing blackjack after, and I wasn't too happy. And the guy goes, did you go see the fight? And I go, yeah. And he goes, how long it lasts? I said, I think it was less than a minute. And he says, you'd rather see a guy get knocked out in a minute than 12 rounds of guys running.
That's for sure.
And I go, yeah, I guess.
We saw it last night, one of the prelims.
Yeah,
the
prelims
terrible. And they say the fight's going to end, start at 10. The fight's going to 10. What time does it start? About 12 o'clock.
Yeah, about 10 after 12 it started.
Jeez, you're sitting there waiting. And by that time, I've had about three or four beers.
Do you remember the first fight you took me to?
No.
You took me to one and only boxing match was Sean O'Sullivan. Me to see him. And the thing that I remember the most about boxing was that when he would go up against the ropes, because he was so white, right? He was just a pasty-faced Irishman. The rope burns. Yeah. Remember I said, gee, Dad, I don't remember him getting hit that much in the back. He goes, those are rope burns on his back. And they look painful. That's the only thing I remember about boxing.
We love Sean O'Sullivan in Toronto here.
Oh, yeah.
They bring in guys from other countries that couldn't fight, and he'd win. We knew it was sort of a setup, but it didn't matter. We kept coming. And then he fought...
Simon Brown.
Yeah, Simon Brown. And I remember Simon Brown. Leonard was the guy that...
Sugar Ray Leonard had kind of taken over promoting Sean O'Sullivan.
Oh, we loved Sean O'Sullivan. We had him on Grapevine. I think we had him on the Grapevine.
Oh, yeah,
we had
sure
him a couple
did.
Times. Yeah,
yeah and him. Boy, he was an Irish guy,
Very just, mannerly.
Oh,
and,
he was a beautiful
He was getting
boy.
Ready for the Olympics because he was in the...
Yeah, he did great in the Olympics. But you said that somebody said that he had too many amateur fights.
Well, we had George Chevallo on quite a few times, too. And we had him on just as Sean was turning pro. And so I asked George Chevallo off camera. I said, how do you think Sean's going to do? Well, I said, we're going to ask you, how do you think Sean's going to do? And I think George says, please don't. He goes, I don't want you that. Don't ask me that. And I go, okay. And I said, why? He says, because I don't think he's going to do very good. And I go, well, why? He goes, well, he's an old fighter. And I go, well, I said, an old fighter? I says, he's fought too many amateur fights.
George knew.
Yeah, he says he's fought too many amateur fights. He says he's not going to do well in the pros. He says he's got, I think he was saying that he says, you know, he's got an amateur boxing mentality, and he says, so.
Well, after he fought Simon Brown, and that.
Well, remember that was at the Varsity Arena, and we went with Brian Williams and Brian Williams' dad.
Yeah.
And his Brian Williams' dad knew boxing.
Yeah, he was a trainer, an older fella.
Yeah, and he sat down. And
remember, we had to park a long ways away.
Yeah.
And Tim and I are walking Varsity Arena, and there was about 10 tough guys in the alleyway, eh?
Yeah.
And I said, Tim, we walked by this. I could see them coming, and they could see us coming. I said, just don't look straight ahead. Don't
make eye contact. Don't,
just keep going. And he said, hey, Graves, how you doing? They're my type of guy. And then we get in there, and remember, oh, that was the McGuigan fight.
Barry McGuigan, yeah.
Yeah, that was my McGuigan fight, that Barry McGuigan. But anyhow, Sean O'Sullivan, we just loved Sean O'Sullivan.
Yeah, but fought, I mean, just to get back to that fight, he fought a guy named Simon Brown.
Yeah,
as they say, Brian Williams, his father, knew his boxing. And he said, either this is a complete setup or he's just going to get murdered.
And Sean O'Sullivan wouldn't quit, eh? He wouldn't go down. And Simon Brown, he was tough.
Simon Brown's manager, afterwards the interview, he was mad, and he says that was a travesty. He says it's like a young boy fighting a man. He says this fight never should have taken place.
And you know, we would have went to Sean O'Sullivan, we would still be going, because they bring in guys from other countries, and he'd knock them out or outpoint them. We thought he was a great, and we still think Sean O'Sullivan is a great guy.
Yeah,
I got one more story to tell about fighting in Boston. I love the team. And Marvelous Marvin, and you had to call him Marvelous, like I said.
Well, just a quick story with that his name was Marvin Hagler, and he said CBS used to have fights on before, like on the weekends, CBS used to have fights.
Oh, I know, he used to watch.
And he said, well, I want to be called Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And the guy said, no. So I don't know if this is an urban myth or not, but this was going around boxing. So he goes, but I like Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And the guy said, well, if you like it like that, get your name changed. So he went and he did. So they had to call him Marvelous Marvin.
Well, I call him Marvelous any because he was marvelous. And I remember we played in the afternoon, and all the players left, and I was all alone in my little wee office there. And I used to have a fridge there with beer on it. And so I'm watching the game again. Yeah, three or four beers, and I'm feeling pretty good.
And there was and Hagler fought that night.
They were the Bull Gang. There was so terrific. They could switch it over, put the ring up, and they were unbelievable. So I'm there, and I remember I had a long blue coat, a long, long leather blue coat, really beautiful, and I had the shirt and tie on and everything. So I come out. So I said, well, I better bring two beers with me, and in the paper cups. So I come out, and now I never ever sat, or I didn't know the seats down below. I was always up above. That when you push them down, they went up again. Pushed it. So everybody's got to see me coming out with the beers.
No.
So I pushed the seat down, with my
knee.
Yeah, with my knee. And I went to sit down. I went right to the floor.
Oh.
And everybody cheered. And I got up. And when I hold the two beers up like that. And everybody cheered.
Didn't spill a drop.
And he fought a guy named Jim Finnegan. And he was naturally Boston. He's the favorite. And Marvelous just. And every time he'd fight him, as Finnegan go down, he'd hold him and let him come back up. And then he'd fight him some more and cut him up. Cut him for 52 stitches. And then he finally knocked him out about the fourth round. So I see Marvelous after, and I was honored to talk to him. And I guess he liked talking to the Boston Bruin coach anyhow. So I said, Marvelous, I said, why did you carry this guy? Every time he went to go down, you'd hold him and let him come up. And you know what he said to me? Is I like to see him suffer.
Can I tell one more boxing story?
Okay, go ahead.
So you were invited to go down, and I think it was the Golden Gloves. They're having the Golden Gloves in Boston, which is amateur, like looking for the amateur champ, and that's the step to go up to the Olympics. So they said, Don, would you come down and be introduced at the ring? And so Dad goes, oh, okay. So you go and you're getting ready. And I remember Mom there, and you had a white cotton jacket, sweater coat, and a nice white shirt and tie. So Mom was smart enough to say, what are you wearing that for? You know, like, you know, you get.
Because mom is a practical person.
Right. So she looks, dad goes, why? She says, well, you know, Boston Garden, it's kind of going down and you're wearing white. You're going to get dirty. No, I'm going to wear white. So they introduce you into the ring. And little did you know that then you sat ringside.
Yeah, they said, well, sit here. You can sit here.
So tell when you came home, tell what happened.
I was all speckled blood all over my chest. I didn't know whether to throw it away or not because it was no good. Because blood on cotton or whatever it was, and I knew it was done. And boy, did I get it there because, you know, I didn't have much money.
It looked like it was a polka dot. It went from pure white to polka dot red.
And I couldn't take off the thing because my shirt would have gone on my shirt.
Remember the suit you wore on Hockey Night in Canada that had all the blood splatters on it?
Oh,
do you remember
one? I never wore that again.
You never wore that again.
No, it was like for Halloween. And it looked like somebody took a paintbrush and put blood all over it.
Do you remember what you did with that jacket?
No, I don't
remember the policeman asked for a fundraiser because for their forensic, you said that their forensic blood splatter.
No, they wanted to wear it and have their picture taken with it because in the police jargon or whatever it is, there are
blood splatter.
Like Dexter.
Like the show Dexter, they're blood splatter experts.
So you gave it to them.
I don't know what I did with it, but when I saw it on television, what am I out of my mind wearing that? And I never, ever wore it again.
Okay, Dad, we're going to wrap it up for this this episode. And then, folks, Thursday, we got almost 200 questions from Twitter, and we picked a bunch, so we're going to answer some of your questions.
And they're great. And I think the first one is, who is it from, the very first one? I know we'll get started Thursday on that.
It's from, let me double check. It's from Noah Marps at NARPS N91.
And what has he asked?
He says, when you were coaching the Bruins and there was there a trade by the GM made that you really annoyed you, whether it be just a bad trade for your team or a trade involving a player that you really liked leaving Boston?
Well, there's two guys and
we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it Thursday. I want to get started on it, but I often think when I watch LaFleur putting that puck in the net, to tie up the game. If I had had this guy, I'm sure he wouldn't have been there. Anyhow, we'll talk about that Thursday.